Thank you so much for joining us today. You're listening to Corrieton Cast, the official podcast of Corrieton Church. When it's all said and done in the end, what will our forever home be like? You're listening to Dr. Rocky Ramsey's sermon from his series in the books of Peter, this one from 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 11 to 15 on our forever home, a new heaven and a new earth.
So our study of the book of 2 Peter, last time together, we talked about the Christian and death from 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 11 to 15. We saw that death for the Christian was a laying aside of these cursed bodies. It was an exodus, a leaving of this world, and it was an isodos, an entrance into heaven, a departure and an entrance. So I want to spend the next 2 weeks talking about that eternal place. So I'm calling this our forever home. Betsy and I were just recently in the, not in the Colorado Rockies, but in the Canadian Rockies. And I never get in that area without start thinking about John Denver songs. And John Denver sang us, one of his songs was Rocky Mountain High. And in that, he has a line that says, "Coming home to a place I'd never been before." He went to a place, he had never been there, and he said, "This is home." That's what heaven's going to be. It's coming home to a place we've never been before. We can't imagine it till we're there. But then we get there, and we're home. Jesus becomes our Lord. The world is no, when He becomes our Lord, the world is no longer our home. An infinitely good Father awaits for us in heaven. Have you ever met someone and they ask you, "Where's home to you?" If somebody asks me, "Where's home to me?" my answer will be, "It's where Betsy is." Home to me is not a place, it's a person. And that's the way heaven's going to be. Heaven isn't really so much about a place as it is about a person. It's about Jesus. Heaven, the greatest thing about heaven is not what's there, it's who's there. The place of heaven will simply be a glorious extension of the unimaginably loving and good Jesus. Say that again. It will just be a glorious extension of the unimaginably loving and good Jesus. I want to begin the outline with what we know about God and His creation. We'll clip through this first part pretty quickly. What we know about God and His creation. Number one, God created a perfect world. We see that in Genesis 1-2. So what was this perfect world like? Five things. Number one, nature was benevolent, not violent. Benevolent, not violent. There were no earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, or droughts. No wildfires caused by lightning. When we were in Canada, you know, about every summer, part of Canada, a big part of Canada is on fire. And I've read up there somewhere, I think I've got these numbers right, that it was like 2,000 lightning, there's 2,000 wildfires a year started from lightning strikes in Canada. 2,000 a year. And every year it burns up an average of 2 million acres. You wonder how there's any left, but Canada's a big place. Nature was kind back in those days when God created, not dangerous. Number two, mankind was healthy, not damaged. Mankind was healthy, not damaged. He was innocent, not guilty before God. He was emotionally healthy. He and Eve had a perfect relationship. As soon as they sinned, all that changed, as you recall. Number three, man was to rule over creation. He had a purpose, had a job. You can read about this in Genesis 1:28 and chapter 2, verse 15 of Genesis. And then number four, man was in perfect harmony with God and with each other. There was no animosity, no competition, no fear. Genesis 3:8 says that God used to walk through the Garden of Eden and talk to them. So God apparently went back and forth between heaven and earth. And he related to Adam and Eve. And there was nothing, all of their relationship was good. No problems, as was Adam and Eve's. Again, this is prior to sin. And then last thing, number five, heaven and earth were essentially one. Adam and Eve didn't get to go between the two, but God did. And we'll come back to that. That's an important thing to remember. Heaven and earth were essentially one. So God created a perfect world. What else we know about God and His creation? Number two, creation was and still is damaged by sin. Creation was and still is damaged by sin. Genesis 3:17-19 tells us that a curse came upon all of creation as a result of Adam and Eve's sin. You read at the end of that chapter that the Garden of Eden was closed. Man would not be in it again. He would not live in that paradise again. Romans 8:20 says that the creation was subjected to futility. This is because of man's sin, also called the fall of man. Now, I've got three results of sin in your outline. Number one, nature is now violent, not benevolent. Nature's now violent, not benevolent. So just as there were floods in eastern North Carolina eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina, we had the floods up in Hazard. We went and helped that church. And now there have been floods in London, which is where we're going to go this Christmas to help up there. There's Rich is planning to go out west and ride side by side, and one of the places he's wanting goes on fire. So you have all these violent things going on in nature. In Romans 8:22, it says, the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. Number two, mankind is now damaged, not healthy. If you remember, Adam and Eve immediately turned on themselves. Adam said he'd have been fine if God hadn't given him this woman. And then they were both ashamed now and afraid of each other and afraid of God. Romans 8:23 describes it this way. We groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. So what this, Adam and Eve immediately knew they were no longer like they were supposed to be. Something was wrong. And then number three, God is now grieved, not pleased. Remember, everything God made was good, good, good. Made woman is very good. But now He's grieved, not pleased. In Romans 8:26, the Spirit Himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. So creation groans, people groan, God groans. Nothing is like it was supposed to be anymore. Everything is now unlike it was supposed to be. The perfect God made man to be healthy and righteous and live in a paradise with other healthy and righteous people. That's what He intended. Now, nothing is like that. Everything is unlike that. We're not healthy people, we're not righteous people, and we no longer live in paradise. So creation was and still is damaged by sin. Third thing, Christ died to redeem all that God created. Christ died to redeem all that God created. And add to the end of that, and sin broke. Jesus came to fix what sin broke. And so He's going to fix everything sin broke. Keep that in mind. He's going to fix everything sin broke. Under that, number one, God will restore creation. You read about that restored world in Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 to 12. Jesus will reign and life on earth will be as it was meant to be. Even the animal kingdom will be at peace. Number two, God will redeem Israel. You see this all through the Old and New Testament in Psalm 130, verse 8, is one of the places He states it pretty clearly. Those are both things yet to happen. Someday in the future, God will bring Israel back to itself. Someday in the future, He will restore creation. And then the third thing that would happen, God would redeem Gentiles. This has already begun. This began in the New Testament times. So more than only Abraham's descendants now would be God's people and His children. In Revelation 5:9, it tells us that Jesus purchased for God with His blood men from every tribe and tongue and people and nation. So people from all kinds of backgrounds now make up the family of God. So the Bible teaches that God will restore creation and redeem people. Again, those yet to have, redeem Israel, those are yet to happen, but he has already begun to redeem Gentiles. Now I want to ask four pertinent questions. Four pertinent questions. Number one, what all has been damaged by the fall? What all has been damaged by the fall? What did sin break? And the answer to that question is everything. Evolutionary scientists, if you can honestly call an evolutionary scientist a scientist, believe in the Big Bang Theory. And they believe that because the universe is expanding. I submit to you, it may be expanding because of the curse. It's coming apart. It says in the Colossians that Jesus holds all things together by the word of his power. But that's why they believe in the Big Bang Theory. As we've already seen, both nature and mankind is broken because of sin and the curse. Even the animal kingdom is affected. When Jesus returns to earth, animals who now prey on each other will be at peace with each other. So there you have the lamb will lay down with the lion and all that. They won't be at war with each other. So what's been damaged by the fall? Everything. Nothing is as it was supposed to be. I just this week talking to one of our members who has a hard life because of a severely handicapped child. And I said, you know, it wasn't supposed to be this way. You know, when that verse talks about God groaning, say, who grieves the most when you bury a loved one? God does. He who loves best hurts most. The reason you hurt so bad when you lose somebody you love is because you're such a good person. If you weren't a good person, you wouldn't care. But it's that loving that makes it hurt. It's the price of being a good person and caring about people. But God's the one who hurts the most. Whenever you see a child who is born and has problems and dies, who grieves the most? Not the mother, not the father, God. It wasn't supposed to be this way. He groans, just like creation, just like us. Here's the second question. Will God destroy his creation and start over, or will he redeem his creation and renew it? Will he restore creation, start over, or will he redeem his creation and renew it? So 2 Peter 3:10, which we'll get to a couple of months probably, tells us that, quote, the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. Now, does this mean that everything that exists will literally be burned up? So that's the question. Remember what I said earlier. Jesus came to fix everything that was broke. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 13, God told Noah that he was about to destroy the earth. Now, did he destroy the earth as in disintegrate it? No, he did not. In verse 17, he says, I'm bringing a flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life from under heaven. Everything that is on the earth will perish. That's what he was talking about. He wasn't talking about disintegrating the earth. He was talking about cleansing it. So when you see this word destroy, and even with the use of the metaphor of fire, it doesn't mean that the earth as we know it's all going to burn up. So God would restart in the Old Testament story, God restarted the human race with Noah's family on the same earth that he flooded. It wasn't a new earth, it was the same earth. Now we don't know the answer to these next two questions. Faith, among other things, is trusting God when you don't understand everything. And the more you understand, the more you'll understand you don't understand. Did you get that? It's kind of like the more you know, the more you know you don't know. The guy who doesn't know much knows everything. But the more you know, the more you know you don't know. The more you understand, the more you understand you don't understand. So when it comes to heaven, there's far, far, far more we don't understand than we do. When it comes to God, there's far, far more that we don't understand than we do. He doesn't fit in our little box and in our minds. So here, these last two questions are just interesting questions to ponder. Here, number three. Would the accomplishments by man made in God's image be destroyed, or will they carry over into the new earth? Would the accomplishments by man made in God's image be destroyed, or will they carry over into the new earth? Man was created in God's image. He was created to learn and grow. Remember, we've been talking about God made us for maturity. Since each generation stands on the shoulders of the previous one, each generation has more knowledge available than the previous one did. And now knowledge doubles, some say every 2 years, most say every 5 years, the largest number is 7 years. Knowledge doubles in that amount of time. Now, why does it do that? Because God made man really smart and capable. His intelligence and capability is something God gave him. It's not a result of the fall, it's a result of creation. So think about that. So that knowledge has led to these incredible advances, technology, transportation, architecture, art, culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now think about it. 100 years ago, a missionary would give a letter to somebody who would probably ride it on a horse and take it somewhere to a train. And then they'd give somebody that train. That train would take it to the coast. And at the coast, somebody would get that letter off that train and take it and put it on a ship. And then take who knows how many months to get across the ocean in a ship back in those days. And then when it got to America, somebody would get that letter off that ship and give it to somebody and put it on a train. And then that train would take that letter to whatever town it was going to be in, and probably the mailman would get it and ride on his horse to a house to deliver it. That's 100 years ago. So what do missionaries do today with their family back home? FaceTime. Real time looking at each other. I just think about the difference in all that. Now, the advancements that man has made, they're not wrong. And many of them are really good. Will they all dissolve in the new world, or will they become a part of it? It's a great question. We don't know the answer to it, but it's a great question. The fourth one is similar to that question. Will the things enjoyed by man that are not sinful, such as sports, cease, or will they be a part of the new earth? So the things enjoyed by man that are not sinful, like sports, that's an easy example, will they cease, or will they be a part of the new earth? These things aren't wrong. They're enjoyable. Does God enjoy His children enjoying things? Heaven's going to be a constant enjoyment. Heaven will not be an eternity of sitting around in white robes playing harps. Okay? That's just medieval art gave all those ideas. If it was, who would want to go? I mean, would you want to do that forever? Yeah, where's my robe and my harp? So... honestly, who'd sign up for that? Jesus talks about putting people in charge of things. So in heaven, there will be jobs, there will be responsibilities, there will be activities. Will there be sports? We don't know. There's a great book by Randy Alcorn called Heaven. I highly recommend it. There's a short version for you wimps, and then there's a longer version. I suggest the longer version. Great stuff. And he talks, these are the kind of things he talks about. It's really a fascinating book. Now, when you're reading it, remember you're not reading the Bible. You're reading what a man is imagining about all this. Remember Jesus said, or we'll learn next week in 1 Corinthians, that heaven will be beyond what we imagine. So will it be some of those things? Now I want you to turn to Revelation chapter 21, and we're going to read verses 1 to 7, where we're told several significant things about heaven. These are some pretty cool things. Revelation 21, let's read verses 1 to 7. Are you ready? Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away. New, first. Don't forget those words. And there's no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. And he'll wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will no longer be any death, there will no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away." And he who sits on the throne said, "Behold, I am making all things new." And he said, "Write, for these words are faithful and true." And then he said to me, "It is done. It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of the water of life without cost. He who overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son." So what do we learn about our forever home from these seven verses? Number one, in verse one, the word new means better in quality, not completely different from the old. It means better in quality, not completely different from the old. When it says first heaven and first earth, the Greek word where we get our word first is the word prototype. It's a prototype. So we're living in the prototype. Now, prototype is when engineers get together, say they're building a car or an airplane, and they come up with a design and an idea, and they build the original one. It's a prototype. It's not the finished product. It's the beginning. And then they make all kinds of improvements before it ever gets to the market and you would go buy one. So that's the prototype. A prototype is not meant to be the end product, but the first version. So the first heaven was a prototype. And the first earth, the one we live on, is a prototype. As we think of heaven, the Bible speaks of it as a country, as a city, and as a culture. In heaven, it talks about nations, rivers, trees. It says there's no longer any sea. Now, about everybody believes that what that doesn't mean there won't be oceans. What it means is that there will not be anything that separates people. So back in those days, an ocean would separate people. So no sea refers to no separation. Now, those of you who are more cultured will remember a great old song from 1960 called Running Bear. How many remember Running Bear? Now that's B-E-A-R, not B-A-R-E, okay? It's a love song. It's not talking about streaking in the 70s, okay? Oh yes, they call him the streak. Running Bear loved little white dove, but she was from another tribe on the other side of the river, and he couldn't get to her, and she couldn't get to him. They were separated by this raging river. Eventually, they jumped into the river, they swam out to each other, and they were both killed by the current. No sea means there will be no separation in heaven. Running Bear and little white dove will be able to reach each other. Now, new, I've already told you a little bit about the word new. It means a new quality, not a new kind or a different something else. I told you that Jesus came to fix everything that sin broke. So he's not going to replace the world. He's going to fix it. He's going to fix it. And in the Garden of Eden, were there rivers? Yes, there'll be rivers in the new world. Did the Grand Canyon exist before the flood? Probably didn't, but anyway. The Rocky Mountains, were they there? Well, they may have been. They won't be gone in the new earth. So I bet you, and I talk a lot about, say, we'll go there to the new earth. We don't want to get on an airplane, fly that long anymore. So the Greek word, again, translated new, means new in quality, not in kind. It's not a different heaven and earth. It's a better heaven and earth. Better than the two prototypes. Are you tracking with me? The new heaven will be like the current heaven, only better. The new earth will be like the, it won't be a different earth. It'll be a better version of the current earth. The word new, again, better in quality, not something different from the original. Now, number two. In verse 2, the new Jerusalem comes out of the new heaven and down to the new earth. This new Jerusalem is described in detail in verses 10 to 27. You can read those later. In verse 16, it says that this city is a 1,500-mile square. This is a huge city. Now, some time ago, I don't remember how many square miles it is, but Mexico City at once upon a time was the largest city in the world by landmass. I don't know if it still is or not. But this will be a 1,500-mile square. So how big is that? It's bigger than the state of Montana. It's four times the size of Tennessee, plus a little more. Will it encompass the whole Middle East as we know it? It very well could. We're not sure. We just know how big it is. 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles. Number three, we learn in verse 3 that God dwells among us. He comes to where we are. He dwells among us, and He comes to where we are. We don't just go to Him. He comes to us. Jesus said in John 14, 2 to 3, "In my Father's house are many dwelling places. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." So we will be with Him. He will be with us. He will again be Emmanuel, God with us. Now, here's a great question. There's a new heaven. There's a new earth. Where will we live? Will we live in the new earth? Will we live in the new heaven? Remember, you got the believers of all time, not just the present ones on earth right now. It's a great question. So Jesus said his Father's house had many dwelling places. They're actually two different Greek words, house and dwelling place. And it doesn't say mansions. That's just something King James threw in there. They figured God made it, they were mansions. Anyway, he says that his Father's house. So where's his Father's house? Well, Isaiah 40, verse 22, listen. "It is He who sits above the circle of the earth," saying hundreds of years before Christ that the earth was round, "and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers. He stretches the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in." The heavens are His home. Remember Solomon said, "The highest heaven cannot contain you," when he dedicated the temple? Likely, we'll move between the new earth and the new heaven, just as God moved between heaven and earth in the Garden of Eden. So God dwells among us, and He comes to where we are. I'll say this twice. We don't know much about heaven, what heaven will be, but we know that someone who loves us, wants to bless us, and has unlimited resources is preparing it for us. I'll say that again. We don't know much about what heaven will be, but we know that someone who loves us, who wants to bless us, and has unlimited resources to do so, is preparing it for us. So let's say you had a grandfather, okay? And the grandfather just adores you. And nothing makes that grandfather happier than making you happy, okay? Just nothing. And he's worth more than Elon Musk. And you got a Christmas coming up. And you don't know what he's going to get you. Question, you think it'll be good? Oh, I bet it will be. He's got unlimited resources. And he loves you and he wants to bless you. We can't even begin to imagine what he'll do for us. Heaven will be more, as it says in the verse we'll look at next week, than we can even imagine. Here's the fourth thing. God removes all death and pain. He removes all death and pain. In 21:4, it says that God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will no longer be any death. There will no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. The prototype is no longer. So we now live in a world full of sickness, pain, sorrow, and death. In our forever home, there will be no sickness, sorrow, pain, or death. we will be protected from every way that sin, sinners, and Satan can harm us. Say that again. We will be protected from every way that sin, sinners, or Satan could harm us. Wow, that'd be nice. No more guilt, no more shame. No more insecurity or fear. No more feeling less than others. No more feeling more than others if you do that. No more hiding from God. No more hiding from other people. Oh, if they just knew, they wouldn't like me. No more deceiving ourselves, which we're so good at. No more desire or need to deceive others. No more need to impress. No more need to compete. Fully known, completely loved, totally safe at home. Here's number five. God makes everything better. Makes everything better. In verse 5, Jesus says that He will make all things new. Again, the word new doesn't mean different. It means better in quality. Better than anything you've experienced here. As I've said before, the greatest moment here will be far inferior to the least moment there, if it's possible to have lesser moments there. God makes everything better. Number 6. God repairs and restores creation. He didn't give up on the prototype of earth. He transformed it into a better version. And then with the heaven, the new heaven, you know, Jesus told the thief on the paradise walk, today you'll, or on the cross, today you'll be with me in paradise. That's the prototype. In the story of Lazarus and the rich man, Lazarus and the rich man, Lazarus the poor beggar goes to Abraham's bosom. He was in the prototype. But in the end, we have this new, improved, better heaven. Not a different one, an improved one, the better version. And that's what you have here. God makes everything better. And then in number six, He repairs and restores creation. In verse 6, Jesus says, it is done. It's done. He's accomplished His mission of redeeming, fixing all that sin had broken. On the cross, it is finished meant that sin had been paid for. Here in Revelation, it is done means that the curse has been cured. It's been cured. The prototypes of heaven and earth have both been upgraded. Satan has finally completely been defeated and imprisoned, never to tempt or harm again. Things are finally again as God always wanted them to be. Last one, number 7. God gives life to us. He gives life to us. In verse 6, we drink from what He calls the water of life. In Revelation 22, verse 1, Jesus showed John the river of the water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb. Interestingly enough, verse 2 tells us that the tree of life, one tree, grows on both sides of the river of life. It's on both sides. In John 6:53, Jesus told us we have no life in ourselves. Life has always been something we had to go to Him to get. It's not something we had in ourselves or could obtain by ourselves apart from Him. He has to give it to us. Life is what makes God absolutely full and satisfied. You've heard me say this, nothing we can do can make God have a better day. His day can't be better than this. He's full and satisfied. And nothing we can do can make God have a bad day. He's full and satisfied. Why? Because He has life. We will finally be full and satisfied within ourselves. As we're told in 1 John 3:2, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is, as He really is. No more emptiness, only fullness. No more brokenness, only wholeness. No more self-doubt. No more comparing ourselves to others. No more envy. full, satisfied life in us. Augustine said that heaven is the end of desire. In other words, we will have everything we want, and all that we'll want is what we have. There will be no, "I wish I had," because I will have it before I wished I did. There will no longer be any, "I wish I was," because I'll be that before I wished I would be like that. Make sense? God will give us life. He'll give us Himself. And when He does, He will be all that we will ever want and all that we'll ever need. Last one, number 8. God is a father to His people. He's a father to His people. This Sunday we'll talk about the kind of father God is. Revelation 21:7 tells us that He will not only be our God, He will be our Father. A perfect father. Some of you had dreadful fathers. The reason you know your father was bad is because you have an understanding, an idea of what a good one is. God will be everything you can imagine a good father. He will be nothing like any bad father any child has ever experienced. Our forever home. Heaven will be more than we can imagine. It'll be everything we'll ever want. It'll be the end of desire. We'll finally get to a place we've never been before and realize we're home. We're home. And what'll make it home is not what's there, pearly gates, streets of gold, et cetera, but who's there. And who's there is the one who has always loved us the most, Jesus.
The Bible shows us that God will dwell among us. He comes to us. He removes all death and pain. He makes everything better. He repairs and restores creation. He gives life to us, and He's a father to His people. Well, we hope you enjoyed today's message, and if you did, why don't you join us for a service in person this Sunday? You can find directions at CorringtonChurch.com. We've got childcare, age-specific small groups, coffee, great biblical preaching, Christ-centered worship music, and more. Bring the family and come see us at 10:15 this Sunday morning.